All right, just for a point of time, I would like to read the three verses for your consideration. So the first verse, again, is Romans chapter 13. We're not going to go through, as we did last week, all of the definitions and the commentaries and all that kind of stuff. I did that last week to kind of show you how I compiled my thoughts in the lesson. We're just going to go straight to what the points of each passage are. But starting off in Romans chapter 13 and verses 1 through 7. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. The authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the saint, for he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. Second verse, 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 13, going down through verse 17. I think I've got on the page through 16, but we included the 17th verse in our sermon this morning, and I think it's appropriate to have it through. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13 and following. Therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men as free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. And then the last verse, Matthew chapter 22 and verse 16. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 16. This is referring to the Pharisees in verse 16, that they sent him, their disciples, with the Herodians. So you got the Pharisees' disciples and the Herodians saying, Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money. And so they brought him a denarius. He said to them, Whose image and inscription is this? And they said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And when they had heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. Okay, so those are the three passages we're going to look at the time that we have this morning. So if you will go back to Romans chapter 13, we're going to begin by giving you the opportunity. I've got a few of the main points that I derived from the text, and I'll put them up on the board in just a few moments. And if you haven't already covered them, we'll cover the ones that you haven't. Tried to go that way. But some share with me, Romans 13, verses 1 through 7. What are the main thoughts or main points that are being made? Not just an overview of the text, but specifically what things can you derive from that text. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different ones that I came up with. So let's see what you have. If you will, I'll give you first the opportunity to volunteer your thoughts about what Romans 13 teaches us. Yes, go ahead, Dennis.
Well, for you ask, you mean, or volunteer before you
I was thinking about where's a pencil while I was talking, and it's hard to do two things at once. I may not have made any sense there, but I intend for those who want to speak up to do so. I'm not going to call on anybody unless nobody does. So.
Do you want to hear them all or just want to do them?
All that you want.
Sure. Okay. I know there's going to be some duplication, though. First, God appoints governments as his minister for good. Disobeying civil law is disobeying God. Do what is good means obey civil law. Obedience avoids prosecution. Submission to them is submission to God.
Okay. Anyone have any questions about what he shared with us? Anyone want to enlarge upon any of that?
It's just the same way he said, more specific with taxes.
Specifically the reference to taxes. Okay. All right. Anybody else have any that he didn't come up with? Yes, Tom.
It's just an observation that was a little different when I was reading through that. In verse 2, it says the ordinance. I was thinking law. But when you look the word up, it's more institution. So the different levels of government need to be followed. I just thought that was a little interesting, different twist than I always looked at.
Okay, good. That is an interesting point. Because, and by the way, I have a, let's see if I've got that in this one or in another place. Okay, it looks like I did that maybe in the second point, second verse. So we'll talk about it a bit later, but and I'll enlarge upon it at that time. But that's an interesting question as to what is our authority in America, and to whom have we obligation to obey in that regard? Because here at this time, which is typical of the, you know, when we talk about our own republic, we talk about the grand experiment, as you refer to America, that's based upon a constitutional republic, which was something that was somewhat unique. I suppose others have come similar directions since in the last 250 years. But having established that and pointing that out, that we're a constitutional republic and the law of the land is the Constitution, some use that as an excuse not to be obedient to the magistrates, the different levels of government, because in our minds, in our opinion, as the way we read the Constitution, maybe they are violating the ultimate law of the land, and therefore we don't have the responsibility to obey them. And I think that your point making with regard to each level of government, where we might recognize, and we do, that the Constitution is the ultimate law of the land, bills of rights, and those kinds of things, doesn't necessarily give us an excuse to say, I've seen that on YouTube just a few times, or videos on social media and all, where these people, they'll get stopped by a police officer on the road, and they'll have their camera on, so they're going to be videoing the whole encounter. And they just are not respectful and not obedient and not submissive, and they all base it on the Constitution and their constitutional rights. And they're just as antagonistic as they can to be to authority. And I just don't think that that's the spirit of what Romans chapter 13 is teaching. And so I just kind of wanted to make note of that in that regard, whether it be your beat cop all the way up to the President of the United States and even the Constitution as we live as citizens in this particular country. Anybody else have anything they want to point out that we haven't discussed? Okay, so I'll show you my points here and a couple of things that I want to note as an application of it. First of all, the first point to be made, that we're to be subject to the governing authorities, but even if those authorities are evil, because I do want it to be noted that the Apostle Paul, and Jesus did the same, as we noted in the last text in Matthew chapter 22, but Rome was an evil empire. And there was a lot of corruption, a lot of antagonism toward those who are of the faith that existed in the first century, both with regard to Jewish leadership, if you're talking about that during the time of Christ, and the Jewish Christians early on in the history, as well as Rome. And yet there is still this responsibility. And so there is no good excuse saying, well, if it was a good government, or if it was a righteous nation, then I would feel compelled to be obedient, but because it's not, I'm not going to. Because the call for such subjection to the governing authorities is given in a time where the government was at least, well, no, more so oppressive, more so evil than even what we have in our day and time. So I did want to make note of that. I think Dennis made this point that civil authority exists by God's appointment or God's authority. And understand this. There are a number of passages which teach the same truth. I like the one in Acts chapter 17 where the Apostle Paul, as he's on Mars Hill at the Areopagus, he indicates that God is the one who establishes the appointed times and the boundaries of the habitations of nations. And the purpose for their existence is that they might seek God and find Him, though He is not far from each of us. These institutions we talk about, well, these governments, they're secular governments. Yes, they are. They're secular governments. But the institution of government, the social structure that we have in the world comes from God in His intent. And I thought that was an interesting thing. When we talk about the marriage relationship, for example, that is the oldest institution that was established by God. It was established in the garden, husband and wife. A man shall leave his husband, father and mother cleave to his wife. The two shall become one flesh. But government institutions are appointed by God as well. It's not an invention of men. This is God's intent. God establishes these countries, these nations, these borders, and these laws so that men might seek God. It is to facilitate that. And so our relationship with the civil government is one that should be not adversarial, not the Christian. The Christian should be obedient and submissive. Laws are in place to control evildoers or evil workers, those who work evil. That's kind of an interesting point in this regard, not only with regard to God's authority, but the practical aspect of it. Why do these laws exist? They don't exist to cause problems for people who are obedient and submissive and civilly responsible. They are in order to punish the evildoers and to limit their activity. And it even mentions, if you'll notice in the text of verse 4, he does not bear the sword in vain. Now the context here, the bearing the sword in vain, has reference to those who are practicing evil, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Can we go so far as to say in this particular context that the sword has a reference even to the point of capital punishment? Yes, Dennis.
Paul said, if I've done anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. Okay. He was saying that the government had authority to put him to death if he did something that was egregious enough to call for.
Okay, good, good. I agree with that. That's a good point. Anybody else? All right. Then we have just a couple of others. The taxes that were mentioned by Josh. The idea of rendering to God and man what is due. This idea kind of ties in with what we talked about in the lesson this morning in the 9 a.m. hour, being honorable. When that text there in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 14 says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God. It also says, honor the king. Now, there is this distinction because it does come up. You render therefore to all their due. That's exactly what Jesus said as we look at Matthew 22 in a few moments. Render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. Render unto God that which is God. But it does indicate that the liberty that we have, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the liberty that we have as Christians does not give us the right to ignore or to shirk the responsibilities that we have to the civil authorities, to government, and to other people. Yes, we are free in Christ. Yes, we have liberty in Christ. But that doesn't mean that we can use our liberty as a cloak for vice, as Peter says in that next text. Okay? So, anybody have anything else from Romans chapter 13 that you want to make note of? Yes, Dennis.
It talks about money, taxes, obligations. The Greek word can mean obligation or duty. It's talking about money. I think those are examples of other things that's obviously more involved. Jesus taught about a Roman soldier goes alone, he had the right to ask you, order you, to accompany him from a whole mile to help him and protect him. And of course, he taught his disciples to do it too.
Right.
So not only should you obey, but you should even do more.
Okay, good. Good point. Yeah, that's that idea of being honorable. And of fulfilling your duty. And the idea, I wanted to make note of Ephesians 6, and this will be in the second point again, but when the bondservants are told to obey their masters. It says, not as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. The idea is that in our civil duties, we have the responsibility to approach it as if we are approaching our spiritual duties. In other words, what we don't do just because men require it of us, but we do it as if we are serving God Himself, because in fact, that's exactly what we are doing. And so that idea of going above and beyond is something that would be applicable in that circumstance or situation. All right? Good point. Good example. So I think that you can see where we're going with these verses simply in the reading of them, but it is important again for us to look at the major points that are found. So let's go now to 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. We're going to have some of the same basic things that are said. Who would like to begin with the major points to be found in that particular text? 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17. Okay, Tommy?
Well, I think there is one different one, and it's more of a... talks about not letting you opposed to wickedness. So not only do you do the right thing before the government, but you do it with the right intent.
Okay.
So that your conscience is not offended.
Okay, good, good. The idea of intent found in there, okay. Okay, anybody else? What are some of the similar things that are found? Because again, one of the things we want to do in these lessons is not only do the main points, but how the main points tie together, how the verses are tying together. So there will be some similar things that are found in each passage.
Submission to every ordinance, to the governors, punishment we talked about, second governor,
the authority of the public. Okay. Anybody else? Looking at the text.
One thing I noticed that was interesting was the word there. Actually comes from a word that means create, and can even refer to, you know, God's theocratic creation. But what it's talking about here is that it's created by man. It's a law, but God didn't make the law. Man made the law. And God said, you got to submit. That law.
Okay, good, good. All right, and what can we take from verse 17? Using our lesson for the 9 o'clock hour, which was kind of designed based on what I studied here. What is it about honor that we tried to emphasize here? Isn't it that it's a fundamental aspect of being a Christian, acting in an honorable way toward all men? Yeah, and that would certainly be in addition to the king. And that's where that comes in verse 17, honor the king, that is mentioned in the 17th verse. Yes, Rick?
Backing up a verse, he says, as free yet not using your liberty as a quote for Christ, which is free from the King James Version. What I get from that is we have liberty because God's law is not, man's law is not God's law. However, we're not to use that liberty to just say, oh, well, it's not God's law, so I don't have to obey it, because maybe I want to do something that I want to do, and I'm using it for my personal vice. That's the way I'm getting that verse there, or that word there. I know of people that will use that idea that, well, it's not God's law, so I don't have to be as subjected to it as I would God's law. So they'll go and they'll do 100 miles an hour on the highway. Not
right. Very good point. Very good point. Laura, did you have something as well?
I was going to say, I think that follows to the previous verse. Not to challenge God. He puts these things there. They benefit us. It's God's will. But it's foolish for us to think that we know better than God.
Good.
And I think if we go against that, we don't submit ourselves. We're challenging Him. We forget that we're not open. We look at like our government and everything. They're challenging men. We don't always agree with what they do. But there's a reason we need to obey them, so we don't have laws.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is different about our nation and our laws and all that others do not necessarily have is the freedom of speech, which is fully recognized by not only the Constitution as the First Amendment, but also as a part of our culture. Now, there are some misconceptions about that and some alterations that seem to be becoming prevalent. But what it is often meant, said, is that we have the right to criticize our government and to speak out against it. And that's certainly a right that we have. We're not being disobedient to God if we criticize our leaders and criticize our government, express our dissatisfaction or our disagreement. But none of that gives us the right to act in any way other than what a Christian or how a Christian should act. And to become, it's one thing to express ourselves, it's another thing. And this, where this would be, have an application, and it's something that I've struggled with a little bit in discussing it, is the area of civil disobedience. I acknowledge, for example, that civil disobedience has done a lot of good in our country. There have been a number of individuals who have been civilly disobedient. The primary example that we might think about would be through, you know, the 60s and 70s with regard to the idea of equal rights for minorities and the disobedience that was there that brought about to a very great extent the changes in laws and attitudes toward minorities and their participation in our society. And it may not have happened as quickly if Rosa Parks had given up her seat in the bus or one of these other things that have come up. But just because some good can come out of those things doesn't necessarily mean that we can, or as Christians, we have the right to be civilly disobedient. In other words, to break laws in order to make a point so that those laws might be changed. Because there doesn't seem to be anything in Scripture that allow for that. I told y'all whenever the COVID thing came that I went to the police when it very first started because they said you can't meet indoors. And basically from that point at the beginning is that there's no meetings at all because no gatherings. And I asked them, I said, what are you going to do if we do it? Because for the first time in my life, I'm considering being civilly disobedient. And it was a conviction that I had with regard to worship to God that I can't not worship God just because the government tells me I can't. Now, I know that there are many brethren, many of my brethren that disagree with that, that they're doing this for our own good. And so as a result of that, Romans 13 might would apply, but it was a pang of conscience that I had. But there's a limitation to that, and that is, as Acts 4 and 5 indicates, we must obey God rather than men. In other words, we can't not be obedient to God and serve God as to whatever we feel that is or is required of us just because men say that we can't. But we're not talking necessarily about that. You talk about those civil rights, and they were purposefully disobeying a law that had nothing to do with their relationship to God or what God required. It was simply something to effect change in society. A good change, but change nevertheless. Can Christians involve themselves in it? And I just don't see the justification for that kind of thing. So, interesting questions that arise in this regard and things good to discuss. Yes?
One thing I saw in this passage in Peter, that may have been touched on, but I just didn't get it, was that Peter says, "Don't forget that we as children of God, we're subject to spiritual laws, but the rest of the world, they care about whether we keep them or not.
Right.
But as citizens, we're subjected to these laws we've been talking about, and they do care about that, and they watch us,
yeah.
And they see whether or not we keep those laws. But it says here, we're supposed to keep these ordinances for the Lord's sake. We're supposed to keep them. And then he goes down and he says that by doing good, you may put the silence of ignorance of foolish men. So it's like our reason for being exacting about every ordinance and not breaking them, not being so disobedient, is so that men cannot look at that as cause against us as the Pharisees would against Jesus.
Okay, good. I think that we've covered that very well, the discussion. The one thing that I would add to it is in this down toward the bottom when it says being law-abiding takes away any accusation of foolish men, as Dennis has raised just now. Rick had added as well. Our liberty in Christ does not give us the right to engage in vice. And again, when it talks about that foolish men will have no cause for making accusations against us, don't forget the fact that accusations may still be raised. The key here is not that there be any basis for it. We've mentioned a number of times with regard to the way Christians were talked about, the love feasts. The claims were made that there was sexual immorality that was present, or the Lord's Supper, that it was cannibalism. Those kind of accusations were absurd and not true, but they were made anyway. But Peter in 1 Peter 4 says, if you're reproached for the name of Christ, you're blessed. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or a busybody in other people's matters. If you suffer as a Christian, you need not be ashamed and you glorify God in the matter. So there's that difference. Okay, the last one is there in Matthew chapter 22. Again, we're running out of time. I'm going to go ahead and take the lead on this because I do want to get to the questions, spend a little more time on them this time. You'll notice in that text, the Pharisees and the Herodians, there's fewer things. It's about paying taxes in this particular text, but it's interesting. Herodians were loyal to Rome. Herod was an antagonist to the Jews because of his being a representative as the ruler who was given his position by the Roman authorities there in Judea. So he was despised by the Jews for his affiliation with Rome. And so when he sent them with the Herodians, the Pharisees, they said, we ought not to obey Caesar. But they came with Herodians and said, you should obey Caesar. So you've got these two individuals who didn't agree with each other. So when the question was asked, do we pay taxes? You have one group that says, yeah, we ought to. And another group that says, no, we shouldn't. They were in opposition, but they were all striving to catch Jesus. And I thought that was kind of an interesting point. Why is flattery sometimes effective? You'll notice it says, a teacher, we know that you're true. Teach the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Why did they say that? What were they trying to do?
So he would let his guard down,
yeah. Butter him up so he would let his guard down. And it's effective because everyone has that tendency or that inclination to appreciate getting their ego stroked. Of course, that didn't work with Jesus at all, did it? He perceived their wickedness. Another question. How did Jesus perceive this? He perceived their wickedness. You think it was miraculous or as a result of his ability to discern as God? Probably. There was something there.
But he already knew the Pharisees.
Yeah, he knew them. Yeah, that's,
when they said this, they didn't mean it.
Yeah, that's a good point to make because we always just immediately say, you know, Jesus was able to know the hearts of men. Well, yeah. This one was pretty obvious. Number one, they're flattering him. Number two, he knows the Pharisees and he knows the Herodians. He when the question is asked, he knows it's a trick question or a question designed to get him into trouble. So it's pretty easy for him to perceive these things. The point that I wanted to make here is we can't perceive like Jesus did in the fact that we know the hearts of men by being able to read their thoughts or their intents, but we are, in fact, given the responsibility to be discerning just as Jesus, no doubt, was able to discern on this particular passage. Be perceptive. Elders are to be discerning. Evangelism requires us to be discerning with regard to men. So that's something I wanted to make note of as well. And then the idea, is it lawful before God to pay taxes to the secular government, even if it is evil? Yes, because the Roman government is legitimate. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and unto God the things that are God. And I did make note of Acts 17 and verse 26. Paul said, he has made from one blood, having reference to God, every nation of man to dwell on the face of the earth. He has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. Okay, anything else you want to add to that text in Matthew 22? Any point that I didn't cover up on the board? Yes, Tom.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting when he says the word render has a sense of ownership behind it. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, because you're giving it back. You're giving it up to the person who deserves it. Same thing with God. God deserves certain things, and we have to give that back to him.
Okay, good, good. Anybody else? All right, so now we get to the questions. First question, how can I incorporate the lessons I have learned from these passages into my daily lives? So, what's your answer? Yes, Josh.
Well, a couple things. So, first of all, we understand God's law, or evangelize, not God's law. We do have the responsibility to follow man's law. With that said, man's law is not infallible, and God doesn't call us to do something that is impossible. And when we're talking about man's law, when we're talking about all the tax laws and all the little, you know, itty-bitty traffic laws, and, I mean, it's not possible to know every single law that we are under in this country. I did my taxes for years, and I guarantee you that I made some minor mistake at some point there. And technically, I broke the tax law. I don't believe I sinned in that scenario, because to the best of my ability, I was subjecting myself to the laws and trying to figure out as best I could what I was supposed to do. And then, you know, getting into the idea of the civil disobedience, you know, you're right. That shouldn't be a part of a Christian's life, but within our system and our laws, there are legal things we can do to overturn things you disagree with. I think that's fine.
Sure.
As far as the application, unless it where it applies to my life, because, you know, again, us here, we're not trying to actually do away with breaking the law. But I think our rhetoric, we need to pay attention to how we talk about things. There are many things that I think, you know, for example, the state of Texas should just go ahead and kind of ignore the government, the federal government, because the laws are oppressive. I don't think they're constitutional. They should just kind of do their own thing and force the federal government to basically enforce their laws that don't make any sense. But as a Christian, I got to be careful there how I talk about that. And I, you know, because if I go online or I'm in these, you know, different forums, or if I go, you know, to everybody I know and say, hey, we should just ignore this law, that's not, you know, that shouldn't be the characteristic of a Christian. You know, I may think that civilly when I'm talking about how our system is and how it works, and we see civil disobedience and, you know, in the past and the good is done like you talked about, and there's some place for that maybe on the secular side for the secular people. But as a Christian, I've got to be careful how I look at that and what I support. You know, we look at, you know, for example, the big thing we think about that's happened recently is the January 6th stuff a couple of years ago. Obviously, there are different sides to that, and if you argue that they're overwhelmed by one side or whatever, but people there broke the law. How are we responding to that? Are we showing support of that? Are we in any way saying that we're justified in doing that? We need to be careful how we talk about that stuff.
Good point.
Because, like this was mentioned, it's, you know, it can hurt our influence as Christians, and people in the world can say, hey, well, they don't care about law and order, and that hurts. Sake,
okay.
So that's one thing we need to be careful about.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm gonna throw mine up just very quickly, so because we, you know, if he wants to add anything before we go to the next one. Pay taxes, obey the laws of the land, approach law keeping as if you're seeking to obey God himself. That's a point we've already referred to. And always treat civil authorities with respect. That would have to do with the rhetoric there. Anybody want to add anything to that? Yes, Rick.
We also need to remember that this applies to every nation under heaven.
Yes.
Right? We tend to look at things from our point of view, from American law, because that's applicable to us. But this applies all across the globe.
Yeah.
And everybody has to remember that, especially in like countries that have different gods for their country, like or whatever. They have different laws that absolutely go against them.
The experience is very different in Rome or in some Muslim land than it is in America. That's true. Yes,
Dennis. Jesus said, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. That kind of answers both of these.
Good.
I answered the first question very personally. When I learned the four worth ordinances that I didn't know about, my conscience requires me to obey those ordinances. Yeah. Everyone in my neighborhood, my street, put their bins in the street. Ordinances on the curb. I can't consciously put them in the street anymore.
Okay.
There's an ordinance that says you must, even sitting on flat ground, you must put your wrist first seat brake on in your car. That's the ordinance. I can't do it. Anymore without setting that brake, because that's the ordinance. Police officer can look through the window, see it's not set by me.
Interesting. Some of them are ridiculous, though, aren't they? Some of those things. Yeah, right.
That's the point. It doesn't matter. That, and that's what First Peter was telling us. You do it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal. Hey, we're almost out of time. Just want to get through it now. So we're going to have to just because we've got a minute left. Second question, how will applying the teaching, the practice of obedience, establish the discipline in all aspects of my life? A respectful civil authority will lead you to respect God's authority as well. So again, this practice is something that is impactful. I mentioned 1 John 4 and has reference to love. If someone says, I love God, hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? In the same way, how can you expect to be obedient to God whom you've not seen if you aren't obedient to the civil authorities that you have? I just thought that was an interesting point to make. And then the third thing, fulfilling duties toward authority is something that comes from and brings forth an honorable character. That idea of honoring in the last verse, which is something that was on my mind in that regard. So those are the three things that I have. We're really out of time, unfortunately. So I do want to just make note of the last one, and that is, what are your titles? What is the title you came up with for our lesson that we studied today? Somebody wrote something down. Obey civil authority. Good. Anybody else?
Be honorable.
I'm sorry?
Be honorable.
Okay, be honorable. Good. The concept is implied in this regard. Anybody else? Yes, Dick.
I'm going to make a comment on what Josh said about in our modern days to obey the traffic laws. That's part of it. You're having some last question, but you missed my hand.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. But anyway, there's more than just one traffic law. And those, for years, those say that sin drives 36 miles an hour at 75 miles or 155, you know. And that's not the only sin. Traffic, that's not the only traffic law. And everyone that I know that did a sin, you don't drive. No, we shouldn't. If they drive 36 and 35, they'll break the other laws. They won't use their turn indicators. That's just as much as the law. And I know part of that, that everyone that I see that drives don't always use their turn indicators. And you can run as far as that goes. You can't even drive in this driveway of a parking lot without breaking the law, because there's a solid line there. And that's the law. Do not cross the solid line. Where you enter to.
I think you got a ticket for that, doing that once, didn't you? Did you get a ticket for doing that once as you crossed from... Okay.
I know
exactly what you're saying. I think the same thing every time I pull in. I just have to say this. We're out of time, so we're finished.